We Talk Podcast is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Take a trip to NYCC in October that takes you to more than just the convention. Think of it as New York City through a comic geek's eyes, including a trip to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash comic book store. Edmonton residents can visit Happy Harbor on Free Comic Book Day to enter a draw for this very trip. Featuring travel packages going all over the world and covering all the genres your inner geek would ever want to embrace, including tours designed around zombies, sci-fi, comic books, and anything else you could ever imagine. Geek Nation Tours is the number one site to embrace geek culture while seeing the coolest places in the world.
All right, I am Keith Kalbeck. I'm the co-host of the podcast We Talk Comics. I'm also a writer for the website Comicosity. And I'm happy to moderate this panel today, Paint and Canvas versus Tablet and Stylus. I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves and talk about a little about what people would know you from or what they should know you from.
My name is Bobby Chu. I work in movies as a concept artist, character designer. You've probably seen my stuff in Alice in Wonderland. I was one of three character designers, as well as the next Alice Through the Looking Glass coming out next year, as well as Men in Black 3.
It's disappointing. I was going to introduce myself as Bobby Chu.
I'm Scott Kowalczyk. You may know me from DC Comics Batman 66, Image Comics The Intrepids, and Oni Press's Downset Fight and Mysterious Strangers.
I'm Vic Malhotra. I've done work with Image, IDW, and Dark Horse. My most recent work is a creator-owned book from Image called Roche Limit.
And it's as simple as that. My name is Gerhard. I worked with Dave Sim on a book called Cerebus for 20 years. We did a monthly book. And I did basically the backgrounds and what they called an environmental designer have become known as, which I like a lot better. So I did stuff like this. And I did it by hand, with ink, on paper. The way it's meant to be done.
The gauntlet has really been thrown down early.
Yeah, I guess we can just end the panel now.
Yeah. All right, someone has to show something kind of visually as cool as that.
I draw giant bee women monsters from Mars.
Cool.
I did the Grindhouse, some Grindhouse stories from Dark Horse, and the latest one is out right now, Blood Lagoon. And then upcoming is Boom Studios' Broken World and Mayday from Black Mask at the same time. That's okay. All right. Oh, sorry. I was done after that. So Chris Peterson.
All right. Well, we're gonna use this moment again. We're gonna use snake format, and I want to talk a bit about. We've got a nice range of the methods that folks on the panel use. We've got really a spectrum of completely traditional to completely digital. Chris, talk a bit about your method, how you learned, and what you use now.
Most of my method for the past couple of years has been mostly all digital stuff, mainly because at the time that I started drawing, I didn't have my drawing table anymore. I didn't sell it and all sorts of stuff, so I had nothing except for my computer. So I started drawing digitally this past a while, and I felt like I'll just keep doing that for a while. And then eventually I did do some back and forth between traditional, going back to it because I kind of yearned for that ink and brush and stuff like that. And so here and there for example, Blood Lagoon, I did all digital layouts, and then I inked it all traditionally. But for Mayday, it's going to be pretty much all digital, except for the first half issue. I kind of did some traditional stuff because I wanted to have some pages as actual pages. But yeah, that's the process. It's right now it's because of time efficiency mostly. Because I gotta get deadline stuff done, so it just takes a while for me to, you know, make sure I have enough information on the page to be able to print it, to be able to draw it, to be able to ink it, to be able to then, you know, scan it back in and all of this stuff. And at this juncture, I mainly do it digitally for that purpose.
Plus it gives you the option to look at a lot of cat videos on YouTube.
Well, that's, while you're all... that's why I'm behind on my work. Maybe I should just go on traditional and then
That's classic Chris Peterson.
Yeah.
Gerhard, do you incorporate any digital into your process?
I started when I was working out, if we were staying in one location for an extended period of time in the story, I would spend more time doing floor plans and preliminary drawings, and I did use a very primitive early program called 3D Home Architect, which did the very rudimentary, you laid out a floor plan with the program, and then you hit the 3D button, and you waited about 10 minutes, and it came up, and you, ooh, which I would then print out, and then draw by hand. I would use the printout, I would take tracing paper, and it gave me the basic outline of the different elements, and there were certain elements that I could adjust the height of, like a floor lamp. So I would have a 3-foot high floor lamp for Cerebus, and I would have a 5-foot high floor lamp for Jacka, and I could place those in the room where David placed them on the page. Because the way we worked, Dave laid out all of the characters and the word balloons and the sound effects were all fully inked, and I would get the page and they're just standing around in a field of white, and I would have to put them where they belonged. So judging on the relative scale of the characters in relation to each other, I would figure out what the perspective was, where the horizon line should be, what the light source is, and where it's coming from. And so that's why it was good to adjust those lamps to the right height of the characters. And then I could move the camera on the program to match where David placed the characters on the page. And then I would print out that little thing with the floor lamps, and there'd be the chair where it belonged and the window where it belonged. And that just gives you like a very basic outline, which I would trace, flip the tracing paper over. I did this every day for 20 years. flip the tracing paper over and then transfer that pencil down onto the page. And then I would type pencil it, and then I would ink it, and then put the tone on, and then do it again and again and again.
What was a day like? Could you kind of walk us through what like morning and afternoon was?
Oh, Lord.
I assume early morning.
Yeah, early morning. We were also self-publishing, so we had to run the publishing company at the same time. So I would go in around 9 o'clock. I tried to keep it to a 9 to 5 job. And I would go in around 9 o'clock. I would pick up the mail. I would open the morning mail. I would give Dave his mail. I would any invoices or checks that needed to be dealt with, I would sort into their appropriate piles. And that usually took the first hour or so. So by 10 o'clock, I could sit down at the drawing board. And it's interesting, going back through the artwork, which you get when you do things by hand, you have artwork.
and thousands of pounds of paper.
A lot of artwork. But it's interesting to see in the margins or on the back of the page, there'll be notes scrawled, there'll be telephone numbers, or, you know, this shipment from Diamond has gone missing, or, you know, invoice numbers and all, because the phone would ring and you wouldn't stop drawing. You'd hold the phone on your shoulder or with one hand and you would keep penciling or you'd keep inking and do whatever needed to be done on the phone. And we had to average a page and a half a day to keep the monthly schedule. So it was 20 pages, black and white a month, plus a color cover. I did the color on the cover by hand. And
just hear you kids today.
That's right, you kids today. Yeah. When I was your age. But page and a half a day. So basically I would try to take, I always worked on two facing pages because that's the way people see it in the book. And I would try to get those penciled by lunchtime. And then take a lunch break and then spend the afternoon. Hopefully, it'd be nice if I got them both inked. If I only got one of them inked, that's my page and a half a day. And then pick it up the next day.
Awesome.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah, that was great.
Now, Vic, try not to sound like a wuss.
Okay. What am I answering?
What's your process?
It's changed quite a bit. It's always been mostly by hand. How I work is
I know how a comic is presented in the end. It's, you know, this big, 6 inches by about 10 inches. So I always work backwards. So I do a rough layout at that size, so I know exactly what it'll look like when it's printed. I ink it up with just markers, Sharpies, whiteout, whatever. And then what I would usually do is scan that into the computer, blow it up, and print it out. So I mostly use the computer as almost like a Xerox machine for a few years just to blow up my layouts, and then I print those out in blue, light blue, and then draw on top of that and ink on top of that.
And then scan it back in again.
Scan it back in, and then all the coloring was done digitally, which is most coloring these days.
Yeah,
it's all digital.
Yeah. I've even done that.
But
you are such a hypocrite. I can't believe it.
I'm just putting on a show. That's all. I said keep it entertaining.
But I recently switched over to almost like 90% digital, mostly to do with deadlines, workflow, and just wanting to get more work out there. In the end, for me, it's about getting more stories published and getting more finished books out. That's the final result. Very few people see original art in the end, and they see more people will see like the mass-produced ones end up in stores or in bookstores everywhere. So I've been trying to speed up my productivity in that aspect, and it's a little bit weird though not having a tangible result. Like you could work on something for 10 hours or 20 hours, and in the end, all you have is a computer file that looks cool, but you don't have like something you can pick up. So that's kind of the weirdest part. The one great thing that I agree with you on is perspective in 3D. Computers have come a long way, and especially drawing programs. I use Manga Studio to nail in all my perspective, which you can do by hand. Like you still need to know all your rules of perspective, but instead of measuring everything up with a ruler and using a tack to kind of hold all your vanishing points in place, you can just mock it up in the computer and do all your straight lines. So that's really useful.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There'd be times because you figure out where the vanishing point should be over here, and it's 3 feet off the edge of the page. How are you going to...
You'd get an intern to hold that.
I do stupid stuff like have a yardstick that I would tack, you know, the metal rulers that have the hole in the end. I put a tack through there, and I would have this 3 foot long piece of metal that I could pivot and have the right. I'm a retard. What do you mean?
Well, yeah, there's so many workarounds like that, like using a piece of string and tying it, and then you just use the string as like your ruler.
Or you cheat. You do the cheat, right? Where you figure out where the two lines are, where you want the top and bottom lines and what angle they're at. And then you measure the distance between those two, and you divide it in half, and you divide that in half, and you divide that in half. And then with the smaller lines on the other end, you do the same thing. Divide that in half and half, and then just draw a line that matches up all those divisions, and you've got your simple perspective.
Too much math.
Too much math.
Hey, down in front.
Scott, you're kind of starting to transition. What's your process like now?
Yeah, my process is not dissimilar to Vic's. I draw everything about business card size. Like I'll draw a layout, a page about the size of a business card with, which, what, 2x3?
Yeah.
So tiny. But that allows me the ability to nail the perspective in and not have to use a yardstick.
Right.
Or a broom or some, like, bad guy as, like, a point of measurement. So that's been nice. And my hand hasn't cramped up yet from it, so I'm happy about that. So small, very small layouts that I then transition into Photoshop, blow up, like Vic said. Basically, technology has just been a Xerox machine for me for the last number of years. But it's an industry about the commodification of art. So at some point, I kind of realized that my entire process was taking about 3 times longer than it needed to, and I was spending like an hour a day on the scanner. Crazy. Crazy. And granted, my favorite scanner is 10 years old, so that might be part of the issue. But once you start adding that time up, I kind of went, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, blowing up the final page that you ink to 11 by 17 and doing that takes twice as long. So now I'm trying to ink everything at print size, which is 6 by 10. So far, so good. I'm happy about it. It's saving me a shit ton of time. And like Vic, I'm trying to transition into digital a lot more because, you know, really a lot of what comic books comes down to at the end of the day, it sounds a little jaded, not meant to be, is deadlines. Deadlines and, you know, producing a body of work that you can then sell. And so for me, the digital side of it is really just a tool to, like for Vic, is just to produce more and to produce it quickly. Sexier too, I think. I don't know. It's all those cat videos on YouTube. They're just so yeah.
I gotta get this if he wants after the show.
He is dead serious too. Like everybody thinks like, oh no, he's kidding. Like the shirt underneath what he's wearing, cat. Big cat face.
It does start with a C.
I love you, Chris. I'm sorry. Does that answer what you were asking?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll talk about the process. So first, I'm not a comic book artist, so I hope you guys don't hate me. But I have had a little bit of experience in it. You know, Batman, Superman, all that great stuff really got me into art in the first place when I was a teenager. And maybe about 4 years ago, DC asked me to do some, like a 10-page thing of Superman, which was like a dream come true. I did 2 pages and I quit. Because it's just, I respect you guys so much for how much stuff you guys have to do. Like a page and a half a day, I would totally lose my mind. So much respect to everybody here.
That's where all the gray hair came from.
You know,
he's only 20.
Yeah.
You're looking good for 20.
Thank you.
I work in film, and usually what I'm there to do is to take the script, take the characters from the script, and visualize it for the director. If you can imagine doing that traditionally, you know, oh, can you change that eye, you know, 5% bigger?
Right.
I would have to murder everybody in the room. So I do everything digital, unless I really, really love the movie. So Alice in Wonderland, I did do a bunch of traditional artwork. One was actually watercolor because I felt extra confident that Tim was going to like it. And he did like it, and it was approved. So I got a nice little, well, I probably shouldn't say this as you're recording this, but I have a nice little original, you know, piece in my house, which is great. That's why I do traditional stuff, is just so I can have a little something in the end, which is probably the same for you guys as well, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so I do love doing traditional work, though. I paint traditionally, probably like once every 2 or 3 years. I'll do a little gallery show in this place called Art Boutique. It's a gallery in Paris that specializes in art from people that work in movies. So that's really fun. I'm usually painting acrylic at that point. But digital, for sure, it's just super fast for me to create a whole entire painting, you know, in just a few hours. And, you know, if you could get to the point where you're not looking at the other hand and just going like this, you'll see it is better.
Can you expand on what that other hand is doing?
It's usually flipping through magazines, looking at cat videos. What else? Yeah.
Chris has a whole playlist. He really makes it convenient.
It's a YouTube playlist.
I hear you're the guy to talk to. So.
See, I was hoping it was a cat magazine, so we get like this whole theme going.
Cat fancy. That's
indie magazine.
I'm sorry. Let me apologize. I'm sorry for this so far. All the cat stuff.
No. It's a theme. It's good.
It's a terrible theme.
The secondary market is an interesting part. I mean, for 20, almost 30 years, comic creators, always independent comic creators, but even in the big two, the original art is part of the income of for the artist selling that art. Now, for the couple of you that said that switching to digital is faster, it speeds you up, is it like, is it to a degree that it offsets not having that original art as part of the revenue?
Rely on the solidity of original art, yes. So I can't say for myself. No, I sold a couple of pieces, but that's the other part of why I was doing stuff digitally before, when I first started doing comics a couple of years ago, was because, not that I started doing comics a couple of years ago, but started doing bigger comics a couple of years ago. I knew I wasn't a big name or anything like that, so I almost felt like it was pointless to have a bunch of art when I could have just gotten it done digitally. And then that's why I later decided to switch to traditional for Blood Lagoon, because I thought, okay, maybe I might have a little bit more of a name and people might like to have some original art from that one. So that was halfway my intention of why I wanted to do original art for that, and also because I wanted to try more stuff out. Bought a bunch of pens and, you know, just experimenting with a bunch of different things and trying to figure out the style. And sometimes it would go faster, and honestly, it goes faster in the sense that I am not on the computer, so therefore I'm not looking at cat videos. It's one of those things that disconnects you when you're doing traditional work, is like you're also you're focused on something that's like you can't switch back and forth between Twitter and all this other stuff. So you're stuck on that page and you're just doing that page. And sometimes when I'm doing something traditionally, at certain points it does feel like it goes faster, because once you draw that line, you're done. Whereas traditionally, I'll draw the line, I mean, visually I'll draw the line like 20 times until I get the perfect line, until like I'm perfecting it. And sometimes that starts to stiffen up the work because you're starting to like lose that. I'm trying to work my way around that, because jumping back and forth and trying to get the feeling of how I like stuff traditionally and how I like stuff visually. And sometimes I'll just sit there and like focus on like getting, you know, the perfect eye and the perfect, you know, nose. Whereas traditionally, I'll like draw the eye and like, well, there you go. That's it.
The way it is. Well, also, you have a lot more control when you're drawing traditionally.
Yeah.
Right? That I definitely agree on. Mm-hmm. Painting, of course, gets a lot faster, you know, if you do it digitally.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel with traditional, there is that slight tactile control that you don't have that slip. There's a little bit of a digital slip when you're just drawing lines, I feel. Whereas traditionally, when you're inking a line, you kind of have that tactile groove, just like a smooth process. So, you know, there's both sides to it. But anyways, going on about the story, I got off track a little bit.
We've got nothing but time, Chris.
In the end, right now, still, I had to jump back to digital because I have yet to have a bigger name, so I felt it was... And you know, it depends on the page rate, too, of what I'm getting paid. So if I feel it's worth... Also, you know, buying all the supplies for those that page rate, is it worth, my time and all that to do that? So there's actually a lot of factors that I factor into it now, because like for one page rate, for one comic, I feel like it would cut in too much, and I don't feel like a big enough name to really justify it, so I keep it digital. And then, I hope eventually, I'll go back to it and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a matter of, like, the ink that I print out for the pages, and then the pens that I use. I go through, like, you know, like, one pen a page type of thing with the pen that I use. And, you know, and then, like, you know, the time that I spend putting blacks in when I could just, like, draw a big thing of black and boom, there's a black. And then, you know, like, it's all those different things. You sort of, like, weigh in and go, like, okay, I got to get this done by... in 2 weeks, which one can I feasibly do? But the page rate, costs and supplies, all that sort of stuff kind of factors in, you know, how popular your art is right now. I've been lucky to sell a couple of pieces, but I don't feel I'm quite, you know, at that level where people are like clamoring for original art, or people like buying like issues at a time with my art. So once that happens, then I'll probably jump back.
Well, it's a a lot of what you're talking about too is economy, right? Like the economy of the actual production of work. Like my work on Batman, those pages I'll always do traditionally because I know they'll sell. Granted, I'm very bad at that business side of it, of actually getting back to people and saying, here's your page, you paid for it, I'm going to send it to you, which is a whole other story. But there's a lot of that decision making. Actually, there's somebody who I owe some Batman pages to, I hope shows up this weekend.
That was me.
Is it you?
Okay. And I paid.
Yeah, and you,
I didn't want to let anyone know.
Okay, you paid double. I'm so embarrassed right now. So yeah, there's a lot of that I think now that maybe 20 years ago didn't really factor in to, you know, what we're producing. Like, you know, Batman pages, yes, they'll probably sell. 10 years from now, I'll probably still be able to sell the ones that I didn't. But, you know, the smaller creator-owned stuff is like, there's not a lot of money involved until you hit something big. And at that point, it's just sort of like, produce quickly, get it done, make it look pretty. And digitally right now, it's kind of hard to tell the difference. Like, I'll do a lot of traditional, like I was doing some character designs today, and I drew a very pretty girl, and I was very happy with her, and for a lot of reasons. And then I zoomed in on her eye, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, that is ugly. That is ugly as shit, and I can't have it. Erased the eye, drew it back in, so much prettier. And that, yeah, no, it's like completely, you can't decipher it at all. But at that point, like there are pages that I did for Batman that I completely redrew characters' faces digitally. And if I were to sell that page, nobody would know the difference. But as the artist going like, what looks good to me? And I guess that's part of it in the end, is you own that, right? Like what looks good to you, and what are you presenting and publishing? I'd rather have a girl with a sexier looking eye than a lazy eye. So I'm going to make that change.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, that's not to say that a girl with lazy eye isn't sexy. I meant one, but...
The thing is, you never know what's going to sell or what's really going to hit. So imagine if, like, Jack Kirby could draw digitally back in the day and drew, like, some of his Fantastic Four pages all digitally, or Mobius did a lot of his output, which he did in the later years, but early on. So you kind of, by not having the original, you just never know, like, if that book gets really popular, those pages could be really in demand. And yeah, Keith, you're right on with saying, like, some creators that I know make like 10 to 15% of their income from original art sales, and it's a hefty amount. But it kind of depends if you can create like a good fan market, and you do have to be quick too. That was probably the best point that you made, Bobby, about being productive and having to get it done.
Yeah, for me, I can't sell those originals. I can't sell my originals for all the characters that I've made because they belong to Disney or Sony or whoever.
Right.
And I should send it to them. I should send all my originals to them.
You're just holding it in trust.
I'm just taking care of them right now. And I got your problem. It's in the mail, yeah. You know.
This does sound like you're creating a black market, like way, like you're playing the.
Yeah, if you talk to me, perhaps I might remember something that I might have brought along with me. I don't know, but I do traditional art because I just want to have it. You know, it doesn't have to do with the income. You know, my job isn't even to make a pretty picture sometimes. It's to convey an idea, and then other people are going to make that pretty. You know, model it all nice and do the texture and all nice. Yeah, so it doesn't really... Unfortunately, it doesn't really apply to me, because I would love to sell a bunch of my stuff, but I won't, you know.
But you could come here and draw a commission of Cinderella or...
Yeah, I just don't like doing commissions because I want to go and party after. And I don't want to, like, have to draw in my hotel room. So, yeah.
We all make our choices. Vic, compared digital to print. What's your what's your page versus day speed?
I don't know. It's so early for the transition for me. Like, I'm drawing this cover. It's taking me so long. It's embarrassing. So, more than a week, and I'm not done this cover yet. And yeah, that's a long time.
That was a shitty thing. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I'm used to it for me. If I had drawn the same cover that I'm working on, it's like a throwback to like the old EC comic covers. It's going to be a variant at IDW. And if I drew that by hand, I probably would have had it drawn and inked in a day and a half. And here I'm sitting probably 9 days into it, still fiddling with digital lines.
See, that's
like you said, you just want to perfect it. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, it's not right. Control Z. That's not right. Control Z. And just keep doing that. And it's just, it's kind of crazy.
If I had a drawing tablet, I'd still be on issue 2.
But I really love it for the ability to zoom out. Like, if you have a traditional page, and pages are pretty big, right? It's like two of these, 11 by 17. And to get an idea of how big it is as a comic, you kind of have to, like, hold it way out there or, like, put it across the room and look at it from far away to get a sense of what translates, because that's all that matters. Like, when you're drawing a comic, if you draw it this big and it gets shrunken down to this big, you would lose lines. You'll lose details. So I always worry about the final product. So working digitally allows me to do that. I can just hit the unzoom button until it looks like it's the right print size, and I'm like, okay, that looks pretty good. There's good balance in the page, which is something that I try to achieve, just the flow of the page rather than getting focused on one image.
I always just took my glasses off. Oh, yeah, that'll print.
So basically what you're saying is just computers shouldn't exist.
I'm not saying that.
I like it.
I'll tell you one downside about selling original art. Dave and I, when we were doing a lot of conventions back in when the earth was cooling, we were selling pages for $100 a page just by beer money for after the show. And that used to go on eBay, and they're going for like $1,200.
Yeah.
And you don't get a penny of that, right? That aftermarket thing, the secondary market, can be painful to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't make, like, those prices happen after a few years, sometimes after the creator even passes away.
Right.
So, like, the actual person who drew it could pass away pretty broke in the gutter.
Right.
And whoever purchased it at a con or something could sell it up.
That's right.
I had bought an original Hellboy page for $100.
Jesus.
Like, from the first arc, from the very, very, very first arc, $100. Because
you do get to a point with like I don't know, Gerard, if you ran into this with yours, but like I've done, I don't know, probably something like 1,000 pages to date, and I have like probably 900 of those.
Mm-hmm.
900 pages is
where do you put them?
Where do you put them? And they're really heavy. And
you illustration board?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I got the same problem. We were worried about the floor giving way.
Yeah. I have them in my garage right now, and it's sort of like there are days.
Well,
where
see,
it's just
but
like
that's the problem. Garages are damp.
Yeah.
Right. The there's no airflow. The temperature varies too much. Right. Yeah. Where do you store the damp? Yeah.
Well, sometimes you don't even want to get rid of a page. Sometimes I like a page so much, going with like you just want to keep it for yourself. I'll price it like some
really
crazy amount.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to sell it, but if someone wants to buy it for that crazy price,
right,
I'll sell it.
Right.
Yeah. Then you'll just think that you're just being pretentious.
Yes.
That's okay.
Yeah. I got no problem with
They're
that.
They're being pretentious for suggesting that.
It doesn't help that you walk with it like a cane with like a diamond on it.
And a monocle sometimes.
But you know, kind of going with what you guys are saying, when I was doing that Superman thing, or trying to, you know, I was doing it everything digitally because I wanted to do it digitally painted, right? And then I started to clock my hours and just going, and I got no original to sell after this. It just made it so much harder to get through the project.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel what you guys are talking about.
Yes.
It's a problem, it seems. You know, it's just like, if you could get paid extremely, extremely well, what would you then start to use? Would you start using 3D in there? Would you start using ZBrush and, you know, to create your work of art and not have to worry about if it's justifiable, right, with the rate that somebody would get?
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, I find myself struggling with, like, artistic ethics a lot, trying to, like, maintain being an artist, but then also doing commercial work. And I recently read, because I just dived into trying to do, like, fully digital work, and I bought DC's Guide to Digital Comic Art?
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's called? It's like a book. It was published like 5 years ago. It's one artist's process. He works at DC, and he goes through it very thoroughly, and he talks about how to set up your files, what size you should draw at, all that sort of stuff. It's very technical. And I was reading it, and I was like, wow, there's like nothing against any artist, but to me, I was just like, some of this stuff doesn't seem very artistic. Like, he was using a bunch of 3D... Well, they were like flat drawings that he would trace off of pictures and to get like a building, like the windows and everything, just completely flat. Mm-hmm. And then he could take that in Photoshop and skew it to fit a perspective.
Oh, that's great.
So he wasn't drawing, and then he would take that same building side and flip it and skew it to be the other side of the building.
Oh, dear.
It was really fast. I was like, well, I know. You know, if I'm going to be thinking about trying to hit my deadlines, do I go all the way that way? And
yeah.
I don't think I can. One thing that I love when I work traditionally is just using a brush and getting messy, and it just has like a different liveliness to it that mm-hmm. I don't think digital can emulate. And I don't know.
I find the difference between my pencils and the inks. There's a loss of spontaneity in there, and I can't imagine. Yeah, I think digital would be one more step removed, right? Mm-hmm.
You could always scan your pencils and then do a digital ink.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some artists do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't tried that myself.
Yeah.
You talking about how people do their pages with that sort of stuff. I've done that sometimes where I lay out a basic room in 3D to sort of gain a perspective of what I'm doing. But one time I had to use I had to draw a warehouse because it's just, I didn't know where to start with a warehouse. So I just found a warehouse and I'm like, okay, this is what a warehouse looks like. So I started doing it. But I always felt like, you know, okay, I shouldn't tell anybody that, you know, I do that. And then I saw a comic with that warehouse. And I was like, okay, I'm good. Because I was like, this is the same warehouse that I do.
Yeah, that's actually a huge part of working digitally is like, back in the day, artists would have like morgue files. What they would call them would be like big cabinets with like reference that they pulled out from magazines, newspapers, and just be like, you'd have to categorize them by like automobile and architecture and maybe make Xeroxes to properly do it.
We were lucky, just down the street was the Kitchener Public Library, so I just used that.
Yeah, but now all you have to do is do a Google search.
I know.
And save it on your computer if you want to refer to it later, or just keep it open. Like I usually have like 80 tabs open in any window that I, like Firefox or something like that. But yeah, that one you have to worry about. You can never take like the first picture to do the reference.
It's where you have to modify it to your liking, right? It's not where you just like copy it directly. But I was like, there's the word.
Well, some people use like pictures. They'll just save the picture and make it like convert the picture to black and white,
right?
And then stick it in the background.
See, I feel so like I don't like that.
No.
You know, it doesn't feel like art anymore.
Sure.
Even in like my field. Because the audience generally will never see the concept art. It's just for the director. It's just to convey an idea. So sometimes you'll have people that just take a couple photos, mash them together, take somebody else's art perhaps, paint over top of it a little bit because it has the right feeling, show the director, and the director goes, yeah, I like that. That's what we're gonna go with. And that's totally okay for them because They're just thinking, you know, nobody's going to see this art.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but because what you're creating is a concept. You're not really worried about the final.
Yeah, but that's not why we got into this business.
Mm-hmm,
not to photo mash and to, you know, trace over stuff. It's to create art, right? So it's like this constant battle that we have, deadlines versus, you know, our values.
Yeah.
Which is why artists go crazy.
For the first year that I was doing it professionally, I wasn't sure what the I didn't know if there was like any like body monitoring comic books going like that is a photo that you traced, or you like you lifted that pose of that leg from this photo. And like I was paranoid for like a good year. I was thinking, no, I really have to alter this. I have to take my own photos. And eventually you just give up because that takes so much goddamn time. But I was seriously worried for a good year.
That's why artists are paranoid.
That's true.
The worst that can happen is you show up on Bleeding Cool. That's literally the worst that can happen to you.
That's pretty bad though.
Now, Scott, I know that your process on Batman 66 was a bit different than it, because you were, like, we've talked a bit about the end product. Gara talked about looking at the two-page spread. Vic had mentioned that Bobby's got his kind of very narrow audience of the director and some other people involved. But you were creating traditionally a product that would be read digitally primarily.
Yeah, it was DC's approach to Batman 66 is, I actually think, innovative, because the actual comic book form artistically hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't really changed since like the 30s. Like, it's still print on page, read it sequentially left to right, and I mean there's always variations within that. But this new digital model adds an element of motion. And now motion by itself isn't really... I should probably explain this a little bit. So you read the comic book digitally. You swipe it over or whatever on your tablet, and something happens within the panel. A character moves, a word balloon comes up, something. But for me, it actually opened up a new form of storytelling that I had never really considered, which was I could put jokes in. I could put a gag in. I could have, you know, a character appear that wasn't there before to punctuate a piece of dialogue. And in terms of the digital world with that side of comic books, I actually think it's really exciting because it's adding this almost sort of what is it in movies where you do the storyboards that are sort of animated,
like a real.
Animatronics. So there's an element of motion, but if you think of, boy, how do I explain this with words? I can explain it with pictures. If you look at a comic book page that you're drawing or producing or inking or whatever, like, that page is finite. There's a finite amount of information that you can deliver on it. Top left corner, bottom right corner, that's all you get. The digital side of it brings in an element that you can't see, which is almost like rudimentary editing for a film. So for me, it was really exciting where, you know, I'd draw it left to right and get all that information in and then go, okay, what can I add? What can I add to, you know, punctuate a joke, or, you know, add movement, or, you know, rip the Batmobile in from off screen to make it just slightly more dramatic? Was it more work? Yes. Did DC pay me for that? Yes, which was awesome. But it actually, it changed the storytelling form for me, where I don't want to look at it just traditionally anymore. Like, I feel like there's a whole other side to it that we haven't fully explored. And I feel like it's a new medium that, I don't know, maybe in 25 years, like, we'll get to look at and go, wow, this is how comic books are produced now. Because eventually paper will be phased out. Maybe.
They've been saying that for 50 years.
Yeah, but like you know, there is a point where I think the actual economics of selling individual issues will no longer make sense in the larger business model of comic books, because the money is made in trade paperbacks. So if you can produce something digitally and add in another layer of storytelling, then it does differentiate digital from traditional. The traditional reading form, which I don't know, I think is kind of exciting, because then that's two different mediums that is still delivering the same story.
It's hugely exciting, you know, and
my nipples are hard to stop.
Like about 2 years ago, we put out the very first fully animated comic book. Me and three other friends. Because we're all in the movie business. We, you know, we're used to motion graphics all the time, so it's just like a no-brainer. That's what inspired us to get into art in the first place, comics, so why not merge the two together? So on the weekends, we would work on this comic book, and it took 2 years. But then we put it out on, you know, the App Store and everything, and it did nothing.
Yeah.
3 weeks, and then Apple tuned in on it and featured it in, like, 30 countries, and then the graph just shot way up. So I think we're on the edge of a completely new era.
But is that a book?
Well, you flip pages.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, but it's in an iPad.
Right, yes.
It's just that every panel on the page, you can't see what's there yet. It's just in black, and then you touch it, and then it appears.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and it animates, and there's talking and everything. And, yeah, because we just, you know, we're living in a time where, like, distribution is no longer an issue anymore, really. And that was the hardest issue before with independent comic books.
Right.
But now you have, like, iTunes and all this stuff that will put the spotlight on you if they feel like it's something special.
I do think that that's part of the growing process of digital comic books, anyways, is the distribution side of it isn't, hasn't quite nailed it yet. Comixology is very close. Like, Comixology is a good delivery system, but it's sort of like, what does digital distribution look like? And I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. iTunes is great. It's nice
it
that there's
changing every like 2 months.
There's nice outlets, but I'm still waiting for that one person or body or publisher to go there. There's digital. You don't lose. For anyone who's been reading comics since, like, I don't know, the 80s, you don't lose that. You no longer need to worry about that tactile interaction with comics. It's just, it's something new. It's a new art form. And I don't know, for me, digitally, yes, I still primarily work traditionally, but I feel like the actual delivery system of the story is changing to something very new. And I don't know, I kind of dig where it's, what's happening.
Yeah, the only thing is you can't have an actual comic book printed out of that comic book that you made, because there's motions happening in the panels.
Well, it depends too, because like my digital first issue of Batman, and I've got another one coming up, is artistically I had to make a lot of decisions after the fact of what was being included and what wasn't. So like it's kind of exciting when you're doing it, because you're thinking about two different methods of delivering the story, and how do you deliver each of them, but how do you deliver each of them effectively?
Yeah, our problem was that in the panels, you might start off at the bottom of a tree. By the time that panel finishes, you're at the top of the tree,
yeah.
And it's a completely different perspective and all this stuff, so you can't make a printed version of that.
Which at that point, I think, is kind of neat, because then you're just selling story. You're not selling a commodified version of artwork, which I love. I love the commodified printed book.
Yeah, me too.
But there's also an excitement in just the story. Like, you know, going to a movie and walking away from the movie and not owning anything, mm-hmm. just having enjoyed the story.
Mm-hmm. Gerhard, now you have a perspective, because you weren't in the Comixology submit world, where a comic that had 200 copies printed is available to the entire world for 99 right. cents. You were taking Cerebus and putting it into boxes for a dozen different distributors
right.
so that you could spread it out to North America. How far would Cerebus have gone now, or were you better off with the hard copies?
That's hard to say. Like I said, on one hand, if I did have a digital, I really do think we would not have got to issue 300 on time, because, like you said, being able to make those changes one of the reasons that Cerebus was the success that it was is because it did come out once a month on time, except for that one little bit where we got off schedule there, but we made up for it. We got caught back up again. And somebody who was a Cerebus fan knew that they could go into their comic book store on that Wednesday and that Cerebus was going to be there. And doing the the trade paperbacks is what really turned things around for us as well. The comic book itself made enough money to pay for, you know, electricity and the rent and whatever, but all the cream was what we got from the reprint books. Now, that in itself led to a problem too, because as you keep the story in print, and as you approach 100, 200, and 250 issues, you start having 12, 14 books to keep in print. And depending on how fast they sell and what the inventory level is, if all of a sudden, just because of the cycle of sales, you're running out of four books at the same time, you have to print those four books all at once, right? I mean, I tried to work out the inventory so that wouldn't happen, but you can't judge the way sales are going to go, right? So every once in a while, it would happen where you have to print four books in one, four trade paperbacks in 1 month. And for a self-publisher, that takes a big hit out of the bank, right? As far as the physical shipping went, we had a printer down near the border in Ontario and a warehouse in an adjoining town. So all the books were stored down there, and we would just send orders down. The printers would send the books to the warehouse, and we would send the purchase orders down to the warehouse. They packed everything up and sent it off to the border. So it was not, you know, it wasn't real hands-on physical thing. It was just a matter of faxing. Faxes. We used faxes. And
but it was cheating, Aaron.
It was. I mean, yeah. There is because I mean, it takes warehouse space, and it takes personnel to move those books around, and it takes trucks, and you have to pay duty and customs, you know, going across the border on these things. And would Cerebus have worked in the digital age? I don't know. It was just the right time, it was the right place, the timing was right, you know, the whole black and white thing was taken off, and the turtles wrecked all that, but, no, Kevin and Peter, we love you. I don't think that's a question that can be answered, because Cerebus was very much just of the time and place. It was what it was, and I don't think it could have happened at another time.
And you made it work, and it was beautiful.
Yeah,
like, you know, making it work when you were hustling, like, yeah. You know, not only producing work, but actually selling and shipping and being the distributor. That's a crazy amount of work.
Well, once we got it all figured out, you know, once it ran fairly smoothly.
See, that's where I'm saying, like, digital is so much easier. I don't want to do all that work.
Right,
but you did it, and. Man.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It's no cat video.
Yeah, it's no cat video. I don't know if I answered the question.
I don't remember the question.
I don't remember the question either.
So sure. We probably have time for... we have lots of time. Do you want to ask questions? Anyone want to jump in with a question?
Right here.
Okay. I guess, how do you feel with digital work, with kind of, as Marcus said, the loss of an aura? So, like, Walter Benjamin's aura in terms of mechanical reproduction of art. I guess, how did that feel in terms of traditional to digital?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you were talking about digital, the delivery system. I don't know if it's as enjoyable for me to read a comic on a tablet or on a computer screen or on my laptop. There's something about having, like, a comic book, and it just feels like, I don't know if we value stuff that you can get digitally as much as stuff that you buy.
I think a lot of it is also, like, level of expectation, right? Like, I mean, if your level of expectation is everything is supposed to be in print, well, if it's digital, you're of course not going to be satisfied because it doesn't meet your expectation. But if there's an individual, and I mean individual in terms of like readership and patrons, if there's a shift in personal perception of, like, okay, why am I consuming this? Am I consuming this to have that tactile experience with a piece of paper? Good. That should be your experience. And if that's the one that you want to hold on to it. But if you want to just enjoy a story? Well, there's a thousand ways to enjoy a story. Like whether it's, you know, tactile, whether it's digital, whether it's audio. So I don't know. I think I don't know that there's any one answer, and there's definitely no one right answer. But it's
comics is peculiar in more ways than one. But in that, a lot of comic fans are also collectors. And it's the whole putting the book in a bag and storing it away and being able to pull it out later and read it again, handled carefully by the edges.
Well, and you know that's almost a subcategory of patron, right? Like it, you know, the collector. Like I was definitely that for a long time, and then I looked at my like comic book boxes in my garage going, Jesus Christ, I'm throwing these goddamn things
grow
out.
Grow up, son.
Yeah. No, it wasn't grow up. I don't mind being childlike, but it was just that physical, I'm done. I'm done with these, you know, physical just things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now if I buy a comic book, like if I buy a physical comic book, great, I'll enjoy it, and then it's in the recycling bin. Mm-hmm. And, like, that sounds like... That, I know.
Deep breath. I don't bag my stuff, but it gets, like... I have them all over the house. They're all worn. Like, you can tell what my favorite books are because I have, like, 4 copies of them, and they're all, like, creased and used. And I take pride in that. I don't know. That's all I like to have.
Something that's definitely very exciting is when you get your shipment of books. Right? Yep. And you open it up and you can smell the new book smell and all that great stuff. But I have to think about all the other people that are making books that totally could have been digital. And, you know, if we kind of brought them back into trees, how many friggin' trees?
Oh, don't talk about the poor trees. I don't know how many trees we killed doing service.
I'm guilty of the same thing. I have art books, you know, but that's, and I like, like, I feel bad, yet I like getting my books, right? So I'm kind of, like, fighting within myself. But how I kind of feel about, like, traditional versus digital is, do I really care that I can't sell an original digital print for thousands of dollars, but I can sell thousands of them for very small amounts?
Right.
Does that really matter anymore? You know, like... The digital comic book that we made, I think we sold it for $1. You know, but does that really matter? Because way more people got to, you know, read the story.
Right. Well, and it depends on the delivery method as well, because, like, I know that there are digital publishers, and the actual method of delivery doesn't always equate into similar sales as to what you would get through traditional retailers. So... that is a factor, because, like, until the actual patronage changes from primarily, you know, reading a tactile book to reading a digital book, well, that, you know, then we're going to stagnate until that change actually happens. I was also, this complete off topic, I want a Cerebus volume called Tree Killer. Cerebus Tree Killer.
I'm making a note.
Yeah, it's so good.
All right. Do we have any other questions?
I was just wondering, if people come to these comic cons, they bring their books, they want an autograph, they want the artist to do a sketch for them while they wait. And if the digital age comes along, what's going to happen to comic cons? What's going to happen to that kind of an excitement for the artist itself? I mean, isn't it going to kind of be like, I don't know, boy bands or something, you're all going to be the same. Are you really going to know who drew this and have that kind of a...
Irregardless of that question, we are going to be a boy band.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if you guys know of Craig Mullins. He was pretty much the first digital painter to paint at such a level. And he was talking to me about... he was actually going kind of against digital, because he was saying, well, you know, you give everybody Photoshop and you have them paint a painting, you're going to see a lot of huge similarities because they're using the same brush or they're using the same program, and that dictates a lot of the style that ends up, you know, happening. But if you give everybody a paintbrush or a pencil, it's going to be completely different, right? So I don't know where I was going with that.
But. I totally agree, but with comics, it's a bit... There's like a very specific, for the most part, look that people like with comics. So I see it. It works. Like, you know, there's like a house. Like a pretty...
It's a boring comic so far.
What?
No. There's a house.
I was gonna say house style, but there's a very specific way of inking for most comic artists. Not for all, but there is. And I don't know.
I guess it's the motivation behind a convention as well. Like, you know, that's something that I, from the creator side, have really kind of been considering a lot lately is, you know, what is the convention for? Is it for that interaction between, fan and person, in person? Because otherwise, like, if so, does that change it from, you know, the digital interaction on Twitter or whatever? I think it does, of course. But, you know, what is... it's no different than the patron of, like, the physical comic book is, you know, what are the patrons coming to a comic convention here for? Are they here for original art? Are they here for autographs? So I don't know that digital necessarily changes that, because, like, no matter whether you're digital art an artist or not, you can work traditionally.
And
like,
even if you paint digitally, you can still make a book and then have people, you know, you can sign the book. Right? So
I think if comics go digital, like music's gone digital, everything, right? I still think there will probably be some sort of kind of a niche thing that'll happen where people will still make their zines and still want to make a product they can give to people. Just like albums of pressed, like, you know, people still buy an album of some certain thing, right? Like, not every album is made, but certain places will make a special, you know, lithographic album or whatever kind of thing. And I think that culture will still stay in the comics somewhere.
And for people who just bring their USB stick to the con and go, can you do me a sketch?
That's awesome. That's so funny.
A digital sketch and they just toss it onto the USB.
Yeah.
I guess that's not outside of reason, though. Like, imagine somebody with, like, in the digital age, Jesus, what is this, 1990? Where somebody has a tablet. We can draw on tablets.
Yeah.
I guess it's not something you can hang on a wall, but it's still...
I've had someone purchase a digital page of mine so that they hang it on their wall. And I was sort of thinking, I might start doing that, like, as sort of like a one-off digital print for each page for, like, $40 or something like that.
See, that's where I think we should actually change the game, where you print off your digital pages and you don't have... You know, you have a much higher volume of it, right? And you sell them for cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, you still make just as much as if you just sold one original piece of, you know, a page.
Well, I've been doing prints and I've been shipping them around, and that is a royal pain, especially with shipping price, post office prices, right, these days, and especially overseas. I had a fellow in Germany who had bought a piece of original art, and it was black and white, Cerebus. And he contacted me by email, and
I really hope it was just in German.
But rather than him sending me the artwork, he wanted me to color it. So rather than him mailing me the artwork from Germany, me coloring it and mailing it back, he had it scanned in, high-res scan. He emailed me the scan. I had it printed out here, colored it, and shipped it. So we saved shipping one way. And now he's got... the original black and white art, and he's got a hand colored print.
Cool. Right? Smart.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
I'm
trying to start to think. It's like, oh, what if we got rid of shipping the physical artwork altogether? And you send me $5, I will send you a file. And if there was some way to have that file, I don't know, like Mission Impossible, self-destruct after 5 viewings or something, right? So for $5, you can look at this file 5 times on your computer, and then it's gone.
Or
they can print it out once, and then the file, yeah.
I like that that's their only two options. It's either an explosion or a
beam. Well, there's gotta be, yeah.
No middle ground.
Well, you can do that. Like, I've, like, drawn... commission or something that I've liked, and I've sent the original off to whoever purchased it, and I've scanned it before that, I've colored it, I've made it a print, printed up 100 copies or whatever and sold them at conventions. It's still my art. So in that sense, you've been able to sell the original and you're able to sell prints of it. So it's kind of, I don't know.
And more people get your art, which helps you know, develop your name further.
Yeah.
I guess.
I said it's interesting as a fan because I really don't like floppies anymore. I don't get single issues anymore. But I like trades. So there is still, I have some of that physical value left. But when I come to a convention, I have to hit the back issue bins as soon as I get here because I want my autograph on a physical copy. I don't want to walk up and say, you know, I read your comic on Comixology. I really liked it. Here's my tablet.
Yeah.
I've been collecting autographs in the back of it. it's that kind of the tactile, but the fetishizing, treating it as a holy object. Because it's now been handled and by the person that, you know, created the artwork.
Well, it's kind of like, it's what the market's willing to accept for actors or even voice actors. A headshot and a signature is something that their fans will pay for. Now with comic artists, that's not accepted, right? They want a sketch.
You haven't tried though, have you? I've headshot.
I'm not answering that.
I would buy a headshot. I would buy a headshot of you in a park.
I think we'd all buy headshots.
Yeah.
But
headshot if there's no top on, and it's just kind of from there up. It's like, oh, what's going on down below? I'm sorry, Beck.
No, but it's what's accepted. Really. So.
Scroll.
Venturing to answer the question, venturing into the future, it's kind of like what becomes accepted by the masses, I guess. And you can only control what you want, but it can become a niche market. Anything can, if enough people don't stick with it, and if everybody else goes off in one direction, then you can only adapt or just be part of that niche. Sure. Try to be between both.
Yeah,
well, Kara, you've been in shows for. Closing on 30 years. How have you seen changes in what artists are bringing at the table?
The only real change that I've seen is those sketch covers.
Yeah.
And things haven't changed all that much. Cosplay, they didn't have that so much back then. That's something. But no, as far as... I don't see any. I mean, the comics themselves look different, right? The digital color is fantastic. It's very eye popping, but it's still a Comic-Con. It hasn't changed that much.
I think the sketch covers is still something even regular attendees don't really fully understand yet altogether. Because they'll ask, like, did you do the comic? And they're like, no, I'm just drawing Mad Men on the cover, but you can draw a dragon if you want to, or whatever. But, and sometimes you draw, this is not a brag or anything like that, but I drew so well on
it
the
is.
Cover.
It's so
I drew so well on the cover that they thought I was, that it was the cover of the comic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's not the cover. Because then they thought I was, because then I flipped it over and I was drawing the face, like I drew a face and I was drawing another face on the back. I was like, why are you drawing a face on the back? Why are you copying the face on the front? I'm like, well, no, but I drew the face on the...
I really like this 95-year-old woman who doesn't speak English that you're talking to in this scenario, but that's my picture.
But yeah, it's still a concept people are still trying to figure out themselves, like just and regular attendees again to explain it to them and stuff like that. But the sketch cover is a neat thing. I just wish they would make better sketch covers for some of the comics. And some of them are just the paper is
the
really,
paper, yeah.
It's really tough to work with. But anyways, that's another subject. But maybe that's what holds on to the niche market area sort of thing, is sketch covers, commissions.
It'd be interesting to get like a cross section of fans in a room like this and just have them sit up here and talk about what they're actually at a convention for.
Mm-hmm.
Because like on the professional side, you know, we come to hang out, network a little bit, see what everybody's been up to. But like from the fan side, I'm kind of curious what a fan comes into a convention and is looking for, and whether that's something that we don't know, and that's why it hasn't necessarily dictated change over 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Question.
Okay, you guys, you come up here now.
We have room for another hour. We could do just a second panel if we wanted to. Do we have more questions? Right here, Star Wars.
Actually, I have a question. For the digital guys, like, what type of software and hardware do you use? And for the traditional guys, like, do you have any preferences? Like, you were saying you use that one ink pen and it only uses up to a page or so.
Yeah.
Any reason why you're using that one? Or you really like the how it glides and stuff? You know?
Yeah, there's I'll answer a couple questions here. Part one question about the pen. I like the pen because I like the way it drew the lines, and it was also waterproof. So if I ever felt like putting like a wash on my page, I had that option. Or if I felt like using Copic or something like that to do that. Whereas I've run into before, like previous pens that I had, I'd always like draw really nicely in ink, and then all of a sudden I go to use my Copic or watercolor or something like that, and it would like bleed everywhere, and I'm like, oh, So that's the reason why I was using that pen. I mean, the pen is like $2, something like that.
Is it Pigma?
No, it's like a Sailor Pentel brush pen or something.
Yeah, okay,
like
yeah.
The thing is I like the very fine, nice line that it had given. And basically after a page, because I use very rough paper as well, I don't use smooth paper, so after about one page, maybe one and a half pages, it becomes a secondary pen where I just use it to fill in like hair and stuff like that.
It loses that nice crisp, fine line, yeah.
Yeah, so I just buy a bunch. I'll like order like pens from the store at $2 a pen or whatever. So that's why I made something like that, for various reasons, because of the waterproofing and all that sort of stuff. As far as hardware for Photoshop, I mean for digital, I use Photoshop, Manga Studio, and I usually buy special brushes that I find online or something like that, or because usually I'm not good with making my own, so I find someone else's brushes. Like there's this guy called Brendan, I'm sure some...
I have those brushes.
Yeah. He's a big digital paint brush guy, and he has these sets of brushes that you can buy. And I get those, and I find the ones that I like closest to what I use, and then I sort of modify from there what I like. And sometimes I'll make it. Sometimes my computer has crashed, and I had to reform my computer, and I've lost all those brushes, so I had to figure out how I did that in the first place, because I didn't have backup. But anyways, Manga Studio is my main one, because it has perspective rulers in it that you can lock down, and it like lets you have perspective all around it, and plus then the inking as well. Photoshop, I used to use that a lot, but not as much anymore because the Manga Studio just seems to have a lot more fine capabilities that Photoshop doesn't allow for some of their brushes. But I still use it from time to time. And I'll use it to create perspective because the only thing Manga Studio doesn't do, I don't know why, is actually print out the perspective rulers. So I have to go into Photoshop, and there's a plugin to make perspective guides, and I just go plot it here where my perspective points are, and it just makes a whole grid, almost like a blue grid, that I'll then be able to print out when I print out for traditional inking. Other than that, the hardware itself, right, I was originally using a Cintiq on a Mac, and I sold that because I got one of the Cintiq hybrids, not the Cintiq hybrids, the
Companion.
And that's the whole, it's like the Windows Surface standard thing, but it was, at the time that I had bought it, it was a little bit better than the Surface was for processing power and RAM and all that sort of stuff. So that's what I have for that. And you set up all your hotkeys on the side, and use that. Then I have two printers. One printer is for printing out. I have it specifically only for printing out all my blue line pages. So once I draw blue lines, I'll print them from this one printer. And my other printer is actually, it's my scanner. Like, but it's all, one of those all-in-ones, but it's a scanner that print that can scan 11 by 17. And that's when I have to scan it back into the computer to send it off to the, because we don't FedEx stuff or anything that anymore to scan everything back. So that's what it is. That's my whole setup is Cintiq for most of my work. Traditional, I have a side desk for that, and then printing out stuff. Is there anything more specific you're looking for? Or anyone else have anything specific?
You forgot your bottle of hard alcohol that's always there going like, I've got this many printers.
Yeah, I have tons of Red Bull and stuff like that. Yeah. And
your bomb.
No, I haven't. You know what? I've never done.
Okay. Okay. And my bomb, man.
as far as pens, though, I do experiment. Every time I do a new project, I do like to experiment a bit. So I'll get like some new brush pens. I'll get some new Copics, or I'll buy a big bottle of white ink to see what I can do with white ink. I'll get another bottle of line ink to see what I can do with that. On the traditional side. I just recently bought these new pens that I'm thrilled to try out, but I haven't tried one yet, because I was sitting next to Jim Mafu at Alaska Mansion, and he had these crazy pens that he was using for doing his commissions, and I'm like, I want to try those pens out. So then I asked him what they were, and I ordered my own, so then I have a bunch at home that I'm going to try out at some point, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, those pens are those parallel pens?
They're
really thick one way and they're really thin the other way, so you can kind of just they're supposed to be used for like architectural calligraphy.
They're really thick, like big thick ones. They're really cool.
They're cool.
I was like to try something new every time I do something traditionally to, you know, evolve to the next sort of.
So it's like me, every time I explore, it's usually nipple clamps. So I
do. You have any comments?
Do you have to pre-program the hotkeys on the right nipple clamp?
No, they're fine. They're fine just as they are.
Bobby, what about you? Since you work mostly digital.
I'm pretty much a tech geek, so I pretty much had every tablet ever made. So, for a long time, I was working on a Cintiq, right? And I would have it up, and I'd just draw like this, and I would work a lot, and I developed a lot of really bad arm problems that I just couldn't get rid of. You know, I went to massage and acupuncture and everything. And it wasn't until I just laid my Cintiq flat and then put another monitor in front of me and just used it as a tablet, everything, all my problems went away. So then I just got rid of the Cintiq. I gave it to my assistant, and now I have a little tablet. And I'll just look at the monitor and just work like that. It works way better.
Yeah. The tablet works good for coloring. Like, when I've colored my comics, the tablet worked great. It doesn't work so good with, like, precise line work.
Totally. So the best outcomes always come from, for me, traditional drawing, scan it in, paint it up.
Yeah.
Oh, and one thing that I have, as if it matters.
It matters.
For my Cintiq, I have this giant ergo arm that does like all these different maneuvers into that, so I can lean on it and everything. That was the main thing, because I was always having back problems because I was leaning.
Well, that's the thing. If you lay it flat, though, I gotta like hunch over. to look at it.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out for my neck and my back, right?
Okay, so here's the question for the guy doing this for 25 years. How do you keep yourself physically from falling apart drawing?
But he's only he's still in his 20s, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I have physically fallen apart.
Baby, you look good. I'm not
No, it's not easy. I got bursitis on my shoulder. So when I'm inking, especially for large lines, I tend to pivot on my elbow. Small lines pivot from my wrist. So I had like a sack of water on the elbow. It's not pretty.
Well, I got that same problem. Like, not that same problem. My elbow got a little sore.
I got a little bit of a red mark on it was
kind of sore. Working digitally. Like, I was using my tablet, and I would just, like, on, like, my... I have, like, a wood desk, so I'd, like, just... put my weight on my arm right there.
Yeah, right.
So then I went to like, I was hunting for like some sort of like gel foam thing.
Oh, I had an elbow pad, a hockey elbow pad. I tried that for a while. And actually, I'm not going to do it, but I'll show you. If you look at the difference between my elbows.
Oh, yeah.
This one has got like a definite, like a calcified
touch
growth.
Them. Touch them.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not a lot of art isn't pretty. I don't recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, so I think like the hardware and the software digital side is pretty much Photoshop, Manga Studio, probably just Photoshop for you.
I'll usually sketch on something called Sketchbook, Autodesk Sketchbook.
Yeah.
It's not an actual sketchbook.
called Sketchbook.
Yeah, and that's really great because the lines really flow. Sometimes when you use Photoshop, it almost feels like it's like doing these very small straight lines to create curves and things like that. But when I use Sketchbook, it's very, very fluid. And there's also the same thing as Manga Studios. It has this really great perspective tool where you can just plot your perspective lines. And then wherever your cursor is, there'd be a straight line, a line like this, and a line that goes towards one of the perspective points. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're going somewhat towards that point, then it'll draw a line straight towards that point. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about it is it still feels like it's freehand.
Mm-hmm. It's
nice. Yeah, see, I bought myself one of these babies, the Galaxy Note 4, because it comes with a pen. And I still don't necessarily draw a lot digitally, but I thought this was probably my easiest way to kind of get into that mode of just doing it in, you know, very simple day-to-day activities.
This panel is sponsored by Samsung.
That's true. If they can take care of my bell.
I bought one of those one time to thinking that I was going to start drawing, like, comic stuff on there, but I
thanks, Chris. Jesus, do you know how much I spent on that?
I'm just saying, I try to do that, but sometimes, you know, different technologies doesn't fit for everybody. Like, you know, you used to see with it where I ultimately failed with it. And we just find what we like the best. And that's the main thing, is finding what you like the best. Not like, you know, there's not a specific pen, there's not a specific software. He's using Sketchbook. I tried Sketchbook one time too, and it wasn't, like, I liked it. I think it like had like a page of a comic on Sketchbook, but it didn't really quite feel the way I wanted to feel.
Yeah, it depends on the version you use.
Yeah.
Their latest version, they upgraded quite a bit. But like, also when it depends on the situation that I'm in, if I'm traveling and working, it's a different setup. I'll just use the Wacom Companion.
Right.
And if I'm sketching outside, then I'll use the Surface Pro because it's a little smaller, easier to walk around and draw with.
Yeah, it's mainly all just finding what we...
Well, and you get to a point where you need to find what you need, right? Like, I've been tied to traditional and being at my desk, and I use the tablet plugged into my computer, so I have to be there physically in front of my computer, which I can't really move. And now it's getting to a point where it's just like, oh, I've got an hour, I'm sitting out in the sun, it would be nice to have something here that I can just chill out with. So a lot of it is just kind of process of learning, right? What you need.
All right, do we have any more questions? All right, well, I think I think Gerhard was worried I didn't have enough to talk about.
We do.
All right, well,
I don't know if I can
I just wanted to mention something that my online school, schoolism.com, is doing with the Calgary Expo, which is the day after the convention's over, Monday and Tuesday. We're having some art workshops, so if any of you guys are aspiring artists, things like that, we're having Steven Silver, he's a character designer for film and television. We're having Nathan Faust, who's an amazing concept artist that's worked for DreamWorks for close to 20 years. He's recently gone freelance. And Stanley Art Germ Lau, he's going to be doing a workshop about how he illustrates DC covers and other stuff that he does. So definitely check that out if you have the time.
Well, let's keep this rolling for plug your stuff. A couple of kids present, so stuff is what I'm going to go with. A couple of you are tabling here at the show. Scott, where can people find your stuff?
ScottKowalczyk.com, at ScottKowalczyk on Twitter. More Batman coming out, I think, in a few months. And yeah, that's it. I just walked away from a project, so I've got a little bit of a gap in my release date schedule. So
enjoy.
Oh baby, I'm loving it.
I'm tabling here, row E, table 7. Come by a vast array of comic books, and I'm doing commissions, and yeah. That's it.
Okay, that's it.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I'm at table X7. I've got some prints that I've got for sale. I do commissions through my website, gerhardart.com, and Cerebus is still floating around out there somewhere, so that's about it, I guess.
I just had a book, my books that just came out, which was the Grindhouse book, came out last month and this month. It'll be out next week, I guess, for part 2 of what I have for Blood Lagoon. After that, right after that, a week after that, is Mayday number 1 comes out, and so forth. And then June, Broken World comes out from Boom. So I just gotta go back home and draw again. I don't have a table here, so, I'm busy doing other work.
Stupid.
He's actually drawing comics.
I'm on vacation when I went to Seattle, so I can't go to too many conventions and blow my deadlines too bad. So,
and I'm at table X22.
All right.
Fantastic. And you can hear a lot of episodes like this one on the We Talk Comics podcast, wetalkpodcast.com, and on comicosity.com. We have a couple of... I have a panel on Saturday that I think everyone should come out to. Calgary Comic Creators, What's New, What's Next, that focuses on the local talent. Chris is a Calgarian, so support his work. Scott is also a Calgarian, and Vic is from Edmonton, but we're okay with that.
don't support my work.
Thank you all for coming, and enjoy the rest of the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well done.